Billionaire investor Warren Buffett has a big appetite for Apple. Berkshire Hathaway upped its investment in Apple by 23% to 165 million shares in the last 3 months of 2017, making it its biggest holding, just beating out Wells Fargo. Apple jumped over 3% on Thursday following the news, which came in a regulatory filing. Buffett is known for shunning a lot of tech stocks he said he didn't understand, but has said that Apple has a sticky product that's useful to people.
This may be the key to preventing the spread of the flu virus. Housed in a Columbia University lab, it's at the heart of a potential breakthrough study published this week in Scientific Reports, which found that a certain type of UVC light can kill the airborne virus before it lands on its next victim. Far UVC light, unlike UVA and UVB rays, which can cause skin cancer and eye damage, so far appears to cause no harm to the human body itself.
France's jobless rate is falling faster than it has done for a decade, and President Emmanuel Macron would dearly love to claim credit for tackling what has long been a scourge of the French economy. But there are signs the country's unemployment woes are not yet over. Today's jobless data shows the unemployment rate falling below 9% for the first time since 2009 and registering the sharpest quarterly drop since the 2008 financial crisis.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's February 16th, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. It's the end of the week. We're happy about that and the start of the Chinese New Year. The year of the dog. So happy new year to you if you're celebrating the Lunar New Year as well. We have a great show for you today. As always, Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview. It's our regular Friday chat about the economy and our portfolios. And a little bit later in the program, Brian Summers will be here from Skift, our regular Friday travel and aviation conversation. Brian's going to share with us a little bit of news about Southwest Airlines and maybe more problems with de-icing fluid. So that'll be cool coming up later in the show in our second segment. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 53 points now this morning. S&P futures up about 6. NASDAQ futures are up about 23 points. Oil's at $61.42 a barrel, up about 8 cents around the rest of the globe this morning. Markets in Europe are generally higher, up about 47 points in London. That's more than a half a percent. The same story in Germany and in France, up almost 3/4. 36 points there. Markets in Asia are generally higher as well. Lots of celebrating still going on there for the new year. So a little light activity in some of the Asian markets this morning. A couple of stories that we're watching for you this morning. If you have a dog, the J.M. Smucker Company is withdrawing some shipments of dog food amid reports that it could be tainted with traces of a drug used to euthanize animals. The company says it's pulling shipments off several varieties of Wet Canned Gravy Train, Kibble and Bits, Skippy, and Old Roy brands. It says an investigation is investigating how the euthanasia drug called pentobarbital got into the supply chain. It's also focusing on a single supplier of a minor ingredient in that food. On the calendar today, the Commerce Department reports on U.S. home construction in January. Some earnings continue today. One of the big ones is Coca-Cola reporting quarterly earnings today. Let's bring in Paul Nolte now from Kingsview Asset Management, our regular Friday chat with Paul. Paul, good morning. Happy New Year.
Good morning and happy New Year to you, I guess.
Yeah, yes. The year of the dog. Let's talk about this week, because when we were here last week chatting, it was doom and gloom, sort of, and now we're okay, I guess.
We're all fine. Actually, the markets are about unchanged now for the year, and in a two-week period, we've gone from, not too bad. We got the earnings or the unemployment report at 7:30 two Fridays ago, and the markets made a dramatic decline over the following week. Last Friday fell another 200-300 points and then finished a couple points higher and have not gone down since. So it's been a big turnaround in the markets, and I'm not convinced that it's really an economic issue or worries about higher inflation or higher interest rates. I think a lot of that was in the markets. I think it was more of a quote-unquote technical issue with the short volatility very crowded trade, which is a little bit more of a technical factor. But I think that was one of the big reasons we saw the markets decline like they did.
The technical part of that, is that because I know there were a couple of reports describing how quickly these trades are made now with the computers and algorithm. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's part of it. And the other part is, you know, you had everybody that was on one side of a trade anticipating volatility to stay low. So they created trades that would capture that very low volatility. The problem was when volatility went up, they were exposed. And when it went up very quickly because they had a cover. So you saw volatility go from 9 to 50, which is a huge move inside of a 12-hour period, a market day or so. And that's really what created a lot of the issues. So then you had the knock-on effect of I have to sell other securities and cover my position and so on. So that, I think, is really what exacerbated what would have been maybe a 1 or 2 percentage point move over the course of a week.
Yeah, I know that when we saw the bottom, I think, of that correction, or if you want to call it that, was about 23,000 something, and now we're back to almost 25,277 mm-hmm. on the Dow. And the other part of the story is the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ is very strong.
And the NASDAQ's been flying. From the bottom, a lot of the FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Google, those are all up 15% or so from the bottom. So the technology sector has outperformed the broader market. It's one of the areas that we really do like in the market and have been very favorable toward technology for a long time. It's one of the few areas of the markets that are providing good revenue growth as well as good earnings growth. And that hasn't changed and is not likely to change for a while. Many of those companies, too, are still reasonably valued based on their earnings and growth rates.
The economic reports we saw this week were focused on inflation. You've described it as hot. Is it still concerning?
It's higher than it was estimated, and we're running probably about 2% inflation rates right now on a year-over-year basis, maybe a little bit higher, a little bit lower, depending upon the metric you use. There's at least a half a dozen that you take a look at. The Fed's favorite PCE is a little bit less than 2%. In the scheme of things, 2% is the magic number that the Fed is looking at. We've run at much higher rates, 3% up until the financial crisis, and the economy did fine. I think we're very fixated on that 2% number, and it's kind of an on-off switch. As long as we're below, the Fed won't be raising rates. As long as we're above, the Fed's going to be raising rates. And there's really not a lot of gray. And that, I think, is what's got the markets excited. I think we're fine at current rates. I don't think, or current inflation rates. I don't think we're going to go significantly higher. When you take a look at a lot of the commodity prices, those are actually down a little bit from the beginning of the year. So I'm not seeing a ton of inflation in the system. Wages will probably pick up here a little bit. That's a good thing for certainly for workers. But I don't think we're in a inflationary cycle like many fear that we saw in the 70s and 80s.
Okay, Paul, hang on. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to continue with Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the J.M. Smucker Company is withdrawing some shipments of dog food amid reports that it could be tainted with traces of a drug used to euthanize animals. The company says it's pulling back shipments of several varieties of wet canned gravy train, kibble and bits, Skippy and Old Roy brands. It says it's investigating how the drug got into its supply chain and is focusing on a single supplier of a minor ingredient used at one manufacturing facility. The head of one of the nation's largest fish conservation groups says Fiat Chrysler's Super Bowl ads glorified the destruction of aquatic habitat in an apparent attempt to appeal to off-road thrill seekers. That word from Trout Unlimited president and CEO Chris Wood. Shares were higher in Japan and Australia, with other Asian markets closed today for the Lunar New Year holiday. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on on 720 WGN.
523, welcome back to the opening bell. Glad to have you here with us for our Friday edition. Paul Nolte is here from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul, I'm kind of curious of whether or not you took advantage of your own advice and did a little buying over the last week or so.
We did. You know, we were able to take a look at a lot of the portfolios, and if some of the names that were maybe a little bit weaker financially hadn't done as well as we'd like. So we used that opportunity to kind of upgrade the portfolio, if you will, for individual stock holdings. And then for those that we have put together mutual fund portfolio, yes, we did increase our exposure to international, especially in large U.S. growth, which again incorporates technology. The problem for us was it moved so fast. You know, we were trying to be a little bit defensive ahead of it. We did okay with that, but then the markets turned tail and started going up, and you kind of wonder after a while if you're just chasing the markets here to chase the markets. But that's part of the program of taking a little bit of money off the table when the markets do go up, putting a little bit back when they go down. So we did some of that over the course of the last 2 weeks.
So how do you determine one of the, you said the weaker names, you've removed some of them. What's your what threshold for that? Is it a percentage or?
Well, you know, we've had, you know, one of the names that I won't mention, it was pretty much flat over the last 12 months. They had reported earnings in the last week or two that were okay, but the stock did not react very well to those earnings. So that it's a very good company, but the stock is just not going anywhere. So we wanted to get out of some of the consumer staples, reduce some of that exposure, increase our exposure to healthcare and technology. So that's really what we were looking at. We've been out of a lot of the interest rate sensitive areas like utilities, real estate. Those have been hurt a lot by higher interest rates because a lot of investors use those as bond surrogates. They provide nice income and are generally pretty steady stock prices. But as interest rates rise, it provides a competition for those types of companies. So utilities and real estate investment trusts have done rather poorly here over the last six to 9 months.
Speaking of interest rates, back to that discussion as well. What are the markets baking in? Is it still a March increase, or is that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're probably now about 89-90% plus that we're going to go in March. The debate now is whether it's three or four times. And based on the inflation data that's come out, the markets are starting to price in four. So we've got, I think, about a 30-35% chance that the Fed is going to hike rates four times over the course of the year. We're waiting. We're gonna hear from Jay Powell in March after the March meeting. We'll get a sense of what he's looking at, what he's thinking about. Right now, he has really said nothing over the last 2 weeks, and so the markets are kind of wondering what his thought process is. The expectation is that he's going to be very close to what Janet Yellen was as Fed chair. We'd like to hear that. So we'll get a chance to do that after their March meeting.
The president and the administration unveiled the infrastructure plan earlier this week. Would you like to see more in the way of actual money and projects there to maybe spur bond?
Well, that's one of the things that I think the markets are kind of concerned about is that we have all the fiscal stimulation that's coming into the markets right now in the face of employment that is running very close to full employment. And we hear a lot from different companies about being able to find workers and people to hire. So now we're putting on top of that a big infrastructure build, which is desperately needed. This might have been better 10 years ago in the throes of the financial crisis. So I think that's what's got the financial markets a little more concerned about higher inflation, that we're spending the money. There's some concern in the bond markets, especially, that nobody, Republican or Democrat, cares about the deficit anymore. Yeah. And that as a result of that, interest rates will be going significantly higher. And the bigger part of the budget is going to be going to pay those interest payments on that higher debt. So those are a couple of things that are kind of working their way through the markets here. And part of the reason why they've been a little bit squeamish, but more on the bond side than the equity side.
Well, I tell you, I care about my debt and paying off those credit cards as fast as I can.
Absolutely. So on a personal level, that absolutely makes sense. If you take a look at the highest rate that you're paying, And those are the ones that you want to try to get paid off as quickly as you can.
Paul, what do you got in store this weekend? Good weekend coming up?
We got a little travel weekend to go see some swim meets. So the end of the season is finally here for one of the longest college seasons around, and that's the swim season. So we'll be doing a little bit of traveling the next couple weekends.
Well, safe travels and best of luck on the swim team there, and I hope you win.
We'll be warm in the stands. I won't be getting wet.
All right, Paul. We'll see you again next week. It's Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago at kingsview.com.
This is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by chicagono.com. Hyperloop Transportation Technologies has signed agreements with the Illinois Department of Transportation and the North Ohio Area-Wide Coordinating Agency to begin working on a feasibility study, which will determine how realistic it is to build a Hyperloop that runs from Chicago to Cleveland in as little as 28 minutes. Chicago-based Boeing has co-led a $32 million round of funding for Singularity University, a part think tank, part business incubator, part education program that prepares people for futuristic technology scenarios. Singularity University, named after a hypothetical future where humans merge with artificially intelligent machines, launched in 2009 and works out of leased space from NASA in Mountain View, California. And the Pritzker Group has invested in LA drone operations startup DroneBase's $12 million Series B round. The startup provides commercial drone missions for enterprise clients, and its customers include Chicago's SMS Assist and JLL. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Southwest Airlines had to cancel more than 200 flights in the height of a snowstorm in Chicago because it ran out of de-icing fluid. But it turns out this is not the only time it's had a problem with de-icing fluid. Let's bring in Brian Summers this morning. He's with us every Friday from Skift. He's an airline business reporter there. Brian, is there something more than meets the eye here going on with Southwest?
Well, I'm not sure how much more there is to the story than meets the eye. You're right. Southwest Airlines ran out of fluid for de-icing last week. It was a disaster for passengers. They canceled hundreds of flights. Certainly something broke down with Southwest's supply chain. They haven't said exactly what happened. They said that they used too much fluid overnight and they had some sort of a problem with their pump. Look, something like this should not have happened. Southwest probably should have found a way to get more de-icing fluid. But once it did happen, the airline had no choice. You can't cut corners here. Planes can't fly if they're not de-iced, and the cancellations had to happen. There is some talk about maybe the industry itself having some trouble finding de-icing fluid, but we didn't hear about this over the weekend at O'Hare. So this was probably specific to Southwest, and it was a problem.
You write that this is the third time in 2 months there's been a shortage like this. I wasn't aware of those other times.
There was a time in December, at the end of December, that Southwest had a similar problem at Midway. I think they canceled about 90 flights. Again, Southwest should get its act together, but you know, de-icing fluid is not something that's easy to source. They say that they're the people that they use have had some trouble delivering the product. And they just said, we're sorry.
Yeah. So, you know, people have tried to tell me where they're directing their anger here. And it seems like maybe it's not all Southwest's fault, or is it?
You know, again, they're putting some of the blame on their suppliers. We're not at Southwest headquarters in Dallas. So we don't know exactly what happened. But, you know, like with a lot of corporations, you know, there's this idea that the buck stops here. Customers don't really care if you blame your suppliers. At the end of the day, they booked a ticket on Southwest. They expected to fly on Southwest from Midway, and they couldn't do that, and they're upset. So at the end of the day, Southwest is at fault.
And this is a costly thing for Southwest to deal with. I would imagine 200 flights being canceled isn't cheap.
No, it's probably not cheap for Southwest. And unlike a lot of airlines, Southwest doesn't really have any mechanisms to put customers on other airlines. They don't have these interline agreements. And so, you know, Southwest is going to have to pay out vouchers to people who are dissatisfied. They might lose some customers. Who knows? So it's not great for Southwest.
Brian, the other news of this past week is the infrastructure plan that was rolled out earlier this week by the president. the Trump administration, and it includes the privatization, or at least plans to privatize, some major airports.
Yeah, you know, it'll be a long time, if ever, before these airports are privatized. But you're right, the Trump administration did say, you know, it'd like more airports in the United States to be privatized. It put two in Washington, D.C. on the list. With this administration, you know, there's always some shaking of your head, some idea that, like, you know, well, what did they announce? But in this particular case, privatization may not be such a bad thing. A lot of the airports in Asia and Europe and really the rest of the world are privatized in some way, either completely private or a public-private partnerships. And there are actually a lot of companies throughout the world that specialize in airports and terminals, and they're pretty good at it. And one of the problems that we have in the United States is our infrastructure is okay, our airports are okay, but many of the bigger airports are run by cities and municipalities. That's the case in Chicago. It's the case here in Los Angeles, where I live. And, you know, municipal employees, they're good. A lot of people have expertise. But they're focused generally on running a city or a county and not an airport, and the airport can be a bit of a side business. So if you had dedicated private firms running airports, it would not be the worst thing in the world.
I would imagine if you had to pull out a list of airports that were in dire need of infrastructure improvements, you'd probably put Reagan and Dulles airports on that list, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you probably would. I mean, they're not the worst run airports. Reagan was rebuilt at some point in the last 20 years. They're just not – the U.S. airports are just not the most efficient and wonderful in the world, as, you know, any of our listeners can attest to.
Here in Chicago, we've had some bad luck with privatization. We privatized our parking meters. They did part of the Skyway. Neither of those has worked out very well. There is some danger here in privatizing these assets, isn't there?
Yeah, there's always some danger. You know, private firms have different priorities. Obviously, at the end of the day, they want to make a profit. But with airports, again, a lot of places around the world have done it, and it's worked relatively well.
Were you surprised that there wasn't more meat in this infrastructure program, especially for airports?
Well, that's more of a political question, I think, than an aviation question. If there's anything we've seen over time, it does seem like this with this administration, there isn't a lot of meat on anything. So we're just going to have to see how it plays out.
A nice dodge there on the political question, too, by the way. Let me ask you this. Where can I get a pair of British Airways pajamas?
Ha! Well, if you're me, you know the airline just sends you the pajamas, which is a nice perk about my job. But I think you're referring to a story that I wrote recently about how people in coach are now able to buy on a lot of airlines amenities that you would only find in business class. So British Airways isn't doing it, but a lot of airlines are. You may know that passengers in first class and business class often get free pajamas. They're ridiculous. They're not all that expensive for the airline. They might only cost $8 or $10, but they make you look really cool up there. And now we know of at least one airline, Etihad Airways in Abu Dhabi, that's selling pajamas to coach customers. So you can look like you're in first class when you're in coach. And this is part of a broader trend that I write about where, you know, if you're in the back of the plane, you're going to be uncomfortable. But maybe airlines can say, hey, for a little bit of extra money, you can have a better experience. So maybe they can sell you a better pillow. A lot of airlines are trying to sell customers a better meal in economy class. I know that everyone would like better food in economy class for free, but that's not very feasible. The average airline spends about $8 on coach class food, and that includes transportation costs. No airline is going to go above that. It's a low margin business in coach. And so, you know, I talked to an airline like Air France, and they said, you know, we're happy to give people a better meal in economy, but it's going to cost about $25. And it's somewhat popular. They say across all Air France flights, about 2 to 3% of passengers are buying a better meal in coach.
I know that you wrote about the pajamas going for $35 a pair, but there's other amenities besides food, isn't there? There's you mentioned Etihad, and they have spa treatments on their plane.
Well, they have spa treatments in their lounge in Abu Dhabi. So for about $250, you can buy access to their first class lounge in Abu Dhabi. It's very opulent. And as you mentioned, they do have spa treatments. The problem is that you have to pay extra for it on top of that. So I would recommend to people, if you have $200, $250 to enter a lounge, maybe you don't do it at the airport, but when you get to wherever you're going on the ground, get yourself a nice spa treatment. It's probably a better deal.
It's interesting because, you know, we've talked before with you about this, about how the airlines are really making all kinds of money with ancillary revenue, some of these other fees and stuff. Do they really need to be doing this?
You know, they don't necessarily need to be doing this. And, you know, I talked to a couple of experts on this. You know, an airline that's selling a better meal in economy class or maybe better champagne, I mean, they'll make a big margin on each sale, maybe an enormous margin. But in the aggregate, you know, there aren't too many people in coach that are buying this stuff. And so, yes, airlines make a lot of money from selling ancillary items, but it's mostly baggage and seats. It's not champagne. So then the argument becomes, hey, you know, airlines aren't doing this to grab money from your wallet. They're actually, believe it or not, doing this to give people in coach a better experience, assuming they want it. You know, if I'm flying on business, I can expense a $25 meal. But if there's no better meal given to me, then I have no choice but to eat the free meal. And so Air France says, hey, you know, we're giving our customers options, and this should be a good thing for everyone.
Brian, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next week.
Great. Thank you so much.
Brian Summers, airline business reporter for Skift. That's Skift on Twitter at skift.com. Make sure you sign up, too, for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report. Comes via email, and it's very good. Skift.com/airline. Make sure to follow Brian as well on Twitter at Brian Summers. He'll be with us every Friday here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures up 25 points. NASDAQ futures are up about 15. S&P futures up 4. Gold and silver also trading higher this morning. Let's get the latest on commodities and agriculture now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we wind down this week in agricultural commodity trade, soybeans rose yesterday to their highest level since July 25th. Why? The ongoing concern about the drought in key exporters, Argentina. Soybean meal futures hit a 19-month high yesterday. Corn futures ticked higher on signs of strong export demand hitting a new top of 6 months. And wheat also moved higher, led by red winter wheat futures on concerns that dry soils in winter wheat country in the Midwest will reduce the size of the harvest there. Turning to livestock yesterday, live cattle moved higher. Market anticipating firm cash prices for this week. Bids and offers at U.S. Plains feedlot markets remain far apart, but tighter near-term supplies of market-ready cattle in northern feedlot areas fueled speculation that sales this week could rise above last week's prices. Then, turning to events on the calendar, the Outstanding Young Farmer Program gets underway, really in full schedule today, and Saturday night we'll be naming the nation's four Outstanding Young Farmers for 2018. We look forward to that event every month. And keep in mind, next week will be a four-day trading week. President's Day, Monday, will see markets closed in observance of that holiday. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Archer Daniels Midland Company is reporting earnings this morning. Quarter four EPS of 82 cents, beat by just 12 cents. Revenue $16 billion, misses by about $590 million. Shares are up 0.3% this morning. As we head toward the opening bell and full trading day, up about 0.5% as it is ADM, the ticker symbol there. Now on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, February 16th, the Commerce Department reports tonight today on U.S. home construction for January. We'll also get advanced quarterly services report. We'll also see Congress breaking for the President Day. district work period. The Secretary of State Tillerson is overseas in Jordan, Turkey. The Olympics continue today. Among some of the other earnings out, Coca-Cola. That's some of the stuff that could move the markets on this Friday, February 16th.